Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The Labor Department moves to expand overtime protections. In the meantime, the department awards a $65 million grant to help states expand their registered apprenticeship programs. Today on the show, the maintenance of way employees and our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger. Welcome to the Monday, July 24th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Mr. Tony Cardwell will be our first guest on the show today. He serves as president of the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees, which is affiliated with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. And they have quite a storied history going back to 1887. Founded that year in Demopolis, Alabama, as a fraternal organization by John T. Wilson. Well, they eventually, years later, this was in 2004, the Brotherhood merged with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters and consolidated their strength with the 1.4 million member Teamster Union, and for very good reason. Once the Brotherhood had over 350,000 members in the U.S. and Canada. Well, enter automation, rise of trucking and airline industries, coupled with policies of conservative governments. They went from 350,000 members down to 40,000 members. Rail labor leaders continue to fight today for job security, better working conditions, fair wages, benefits, improved safety conditions, elimination of massive cutbacks with employees. And we, like I just said, we've seen how many have been lost over the years. Tony is going to talk about, rail safety, number one. That's been an issue, especially with what happened in East Palestine, Ohio, with that train derailment back in February. Also, sick leave. This was a huge issue last fall. And there was a possibility of a strike. Well, you can't really strike with the Railway Labor Act. He's going to explain all of that. Also talk about the state of the railroad industry today moving forward. National website, bmwe.org, bmwe.org, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees. Tommy Buffenbarger, our independent labor voice, will be joining us later in the show, and he, too, is going to talk about worker safety laws. And I'll tell you, there's a number of elected leaders, conservative electric leaders, I might add, that would like to do away with OSHA, and they're finding ways to do that. The House Appropriations Committee on the Republican side, just last week, what they did, it was a money bill, and they reduced OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, by more than $100 million. And that drew some criticism from Jessica Martinez, co-director of the National Council on Occupational Safety and Health. We have referenced them on the show many, many times. She called the cuts dangerous to workplace safety, heartless, and ill-advised. And she points out OSHA already operates on a meager budget. We're also going to talk about the Defense Authorization Act and making sure that there are provisions for Made in America. So important. And I'll tell you, they get overlooked all the time. We'll also talk about organizing with Tom. Recently, workers at the Aerojet Rocketdyne facility, this was in Huntsville, Alabama, they decided to unionize and line up with the Machinist Union, which is Tom's union, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Tom Buffenbarger. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management, offering fixed income, real estate, equity investment options to clients nationwide. And they've been doing this since 1928. You can find more at BoydWaterson.com. The Wage and Hour Division of the U.S. Department of Labor sent the White House a proposal to expand overtime protections to more workers. Now, currently, salaried workers who make more than a certain amount of money per year and work in a bona fide executive, administrative, or professional capacity are exempt from the 1.5 overtime pay requirements under the Fair Labor Standards Act. 1.5 meaning you get time and a half. The new proposal raises the salary threshold piece of the test, which would expand overtime protections to more workers. More details of the proposal will be available once it is cleared by the White House to be published in the Federal Register. Boy, this has been an issue that's been going back and forth for years. Hopefully they can raise that threshold. I remember reading a story about a manager, I believe it was at a Dunkin' Donuts, and she was making about $43,000 a year. This was about 3 or 4 years ago. And figuring, oh, okay, just out of college, young person in 20s, learning some managerial experience. The problem with that amount of money, she was working 70, 80 hours a week. Now, break that down, and you'll see the ridiculous wage that she was actually making. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Labor has announced the award of more than $65 million in grants to 45 states to increase their ability to serve, improve, and strategically expand their registered apprenticeship programs and pre-apprenticeship programs. The awards include an annual formula funding process that's going to go to the 45 states and territories, and additional funding to 7 states committed to increasing sustainability and substantially increasing the number and diversity of registered apprenticeship programs. Comment here from the Acting Assistant Secretary for Employment and Training. That would be Brent Parton. Brent said, registered apprenticeship programs help remove barriers to economic opportunity faced by people from all communities by equipping them with industry-driven skills and by creating pathways to good jobs in high-growth, high-demand industries. This announcement, actually, it's $65.5 million in grants, aligns the Biden-Harris' administration's efforts to strengthen and expand registered apprenticeships. This will all be administered by the department's Employment and Training Administration, and they're going to focus on advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, infrastructure, clean energy, education, and healthcare. Parton said, state apprenticeship expansion formula and competitive grants help create pathways and increase states' registered apprenticeship programs for high growth and high demand industries. This is all modeled, obviously, after the building trades, which is pretty much the gold standard. Now, these programs are very similar but different at the same time. I mean, the building trades, obviously, it's an earn while you learn, and it goes on for several years. But the industries of the future, advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, boy, I tell you, a lot of growth there. Just running down the states here, I'm going to do a shout-out here to Georgia. They got $927,000. Illinois, $1.3 million. Michigan, $1.1 million. Ohio, $1.3 million. Pennsylvania, $1.2 million. Let's see, Texas. Texas got $2.1 million from the Labor Department. A right-to-work state, I might add. So good news from the Labor Department there. Unite Here, Local 11 hotel workers attended their first bargaining session last Tuesday since strikes began in early July. The union accused the hotels of failing to hire black workers in full-time roles, especially in hotels near neighborhoods with significant black populations. But bringing in black workers for part-time work during the strike through temporary work apps. How about that? Union also filed a complaint with the labor board against InstaWork. InstaWork is a strike-breaking temporary work app, claiming the app automatically penalizes workers who take part in a legally protected strike. Replacement workers on InstaWork who refuse to attend shifts for struck work have faced decreased ratings in the app and have had their future shifts canceled. Hotel representatives left the bargaining session last week after the union proposed hiring all replacement workers, including a higher percentage of black workers, as full-time workers at bargaining hotels. That thing is getting pretty contentious. How about that? InstaWork, a strike-breaking temporary work app. All right, quick break. When we come back, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment. You could find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome a newcomer to the show. His name is Tony Cardwell. Tony serves as president of the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees, which is a division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. They lined up with the Teamsters almost 20 years ago. National website, bmwe.org. Tony, welcome to America's Workforce. And I always like to talk a little bit when we have a new guest to get a little background. And I understand we're talking off the air here. I guess you didn't have much of a union history. So what was it, 24 years ago, you decided to work on the railroad. Why don't you pick it up from there? And what made you go in that direction? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was looking for a job. We'd just gotten out of college, my wife and I. And my wife, we incurred quite a bit of debt. My wife was working as an intern, and we needed some money. So it paid well. So I applied for the job on the railroad and was hired. I hired into a union job, didn't really know anything about it, didn't understand it. Came from I wouldn't say an anti-union family, but kind of a family that didn't really understand union or never really was involved in the union. And worked there for a couple of years. In doing so, I got introduced to the union by a couple of very hardened union guys that were working in the area. I kind of had some anti-union sentiments because I didn't understand it, and they started talking to me about it. I like to tell my story because I think everyone out on the property that's a union guy should understand. If you have the patience and you take the time to talk with folks, sometimes get people to understand and listen, and it makes a difference. And so they took the time to sit with me and explain to me and have those arguments. Of course, I argued against it because I didn't fully understand it. And they got me to come to a meeting, and from there on, I became a diehard union guy. It's my, you know, one of the main things that I do for everything, for my hobby, for my passion is working for folks and trying to help each other out. And from there on, I was hardcore union guy.
Sounds like you're like a little stubborn at first, but you came around and now you're 100% union. I like that. That's a good story there. So you started in the Pacific Northwest, you said around the Oregon area. And I have to ask you, when you started 24 years ago, and you know, we're hearing a whole lot about rail safety today, and we know it. We record this show in Cleveland, Ohio, not far from East Palestine, Ohio. I know you were watching the developments there, and that led to, there's some legislation they're trying to iron out, I know, in Capitol Hill, because especially when you have these tanker cars, that are carrying flammable materials, you have to wonder, okay, maybe we should notify the community that we're coming through and there could be an accident here. But if you go back to that time 24 years ago, how safe was it? I'm just wondering what has happened here in the past quarter of a century. Can you address that first?
Yeah, railroads always had its problems with safety. It's always fought. Safety bills, safety legislation. Safety costs money, and you know, the hardest vulture capitalists in the country are railroaders, in my opinion. Always have been railroad. I wouldn't say railroaders, railroad barons. And so they've continued to fight hard against any type of legislation, any type of safety enforcement, and they've done a pretty effective job of it. And so where the government has conceded, the railroads have failed. Ultimately, they've gotten laws that just aren't strict enough, and we have – I tell people this, it's a little astonishing. We have right now, we have over 1,000 derailments a year. And people just shake their heads because it's hard to believe. If you had 1,000 plane wrecks in a year, the industry, the airline industry wouldn't survive. You have 1,000 derailments in a year and nobody really even notices it, because they don't notice until something happens like East Palestine. Mm-hmm. And the railroad's really not changing. And it pretended like it did. It gave us a head fake. It pretended it talked the game, but it really hasn't adjusted anything, because it's just ultimately set to operate as unsafe as it possibly can, because it's expensive to operate safely. And it eats into the profit. It's not like they can't afford it. These are just multi-billion-dollar companies. They are some of the highest profiteering companies in the world. A lot of people don't understand the railroads make the most margin of profit than virtually most other companies. They're always trying to push over 50% profits. So out of every dollar that comes in, they're trying to, you know, get that up to 50% of that to be pure profit, which is just absurd. And most other companies here, they're lucky if they get 4 or 5% profit. That's huge margins. And the railroad is completely different. It's one of the most profitable companies out there. So anytime those profits are cut into, the railroads get pretty vicious with legislation, and they try to, you know, they have what they call the AAR, which is a lobby group that lobbies against anything that's being put forward. And right now, the rail safety bill is getting watered down. Unfortunately, we're working hard to keep some real language in there, some teeth. But even in the light of East Palestine, the railroad is just absolutely lobbying, you know, as hard as they can against any real teeth in the bill. Because anything that costs them money, they don't want it, you know, an extra labor cost. They don't want to. So It all starts with in 2016 when the railroads started a what they call precision scheduled railroading, which is a type of railroading that they do that just cut all, I mean, they cut everything to the bone and sucked, you know, all the money it possibly can out of the industry. it reduced employment since that time by about close to 30%. And so they're operating on bare bones, and it's getting worse and not better. Unfortunately, of course, we're putting up a fight, and we're trying to bring awareness to it. So I love to be on shows like this so that I can talk about it. But ultimately, they're still succeeding, and even in light of the negotiations, we try to bring this to light as well. And we try to warn people that if the railroads don't change, we're going to have some, unfortunate situation. It's going to be a problem, unsafe communities and whatnot. And shortly after that, we were having those discussions in October and November, and shortly after that, we had East Palestine.
Yeah.
And it's I always warn it's going to happen again. It's just a matter of time. And, we try to warn, we try to tell people that these trains operate through your communities, and it's important. We try to tell our public servants the same thing, that these trains operate through your communities that you represent, and it's important that, the legislation's tight. It's important that they're regulated in a more serious way, because they will continue to cut costs by all measures, and they ultimately are going to fail again. So it's unfortunate we're in the situation we are, but we are there, and I think it's going to take some public awareness, so we're trying to raise that to where there's an outcry to say, hey, you must operate safely if you're going to operate in our communities. The railroads don't like it, because the maintenance away is one of the loudest voices in this arena. We push the hardest. We spend a lot of money trying to get the legislation right, and trying to fight against, the lobby groups on the other side. And they definitely don't like us. We're a thorn in their sides. But, it's not always easy to do what we do, but it's fun. And our members deserve it, because they're working in a situation, too, where it's, become less safe. There's more demand on their time. Our employees are averaging, 60, 70-hour work weeks. And they're cut to the bone. They're being worked we've gone back about 70 years in the way they work these guys. It's just crazy. So
yeah,
we are where we are.
Yeah, I couldn't believe the fight over sick leave. I mean, come on, in today's world, that was absolutely ridiculous. Well, it appears the lobbyists, to your point, they're winning. I want to talk about the rail safety bill, but before we get to that, the House Appropriations Committee, which is pretty much in control of the GOP, just last week, they wanted to cut funds for the Federal Railroad Administration. They would get $1.4 billion, which is $1.9 billion below the previous year's level, and $3.3 billion below the president's budget request. I mean, this is ridiculous. Here we're talking about rail safety, and instead of enhancing this and putting more money into this, they're going in the opposite direction. Let me ask you this, Tony. You mentioned about East Palestine, Ohio, and one of the issues that has come up is, will the communities be notified if these hazardous tanker cars come through their community? Be forewarned about it, because the first responder, they didn't even know what they were going into. They had no idea. I'm wondering, is that still in the legislation, to your knowledge?
I think it's being watered down, to be honest with you. It's unfortunate, and I don't say it laughing. I just shake my head at the, sometimes you can only laugh at the stupidity. It's crazy. But it's being watered down. The mandate is being watered down. So ultimately there'll be some type of change there, but nothing that's going to be, a game changer. And that's the problem. And some of the hot box legislation is being watered down. So the mandate for the hot boxes, which would have detected the situation, it's being watered down as well. It's absolutely crazy. Now, I don't represent the signal folks, but I work closely with them. They're called the BRS, Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen, and they're fighting back on a lot of legislation which sets the detectors in place and ultimately mandates that they keep better watch on this stuff. But the same railroads that stood on when they were being interviewed and said, "We'll do everything we can to operate more safely in these communities," is using their lobbyists to lobby against the bills that are put in place. And I say this as a conservative individual, but the Republicans are obviously the ones fighting, pushing back on this and pushing legislation that would take more money away from these things. It's completely absurd. And those same Republicans stood there and grilled the railroads and the committee hearings and said, you know, why not this and why not that? And you know, were hard on them. And yet didn't turn around and are, you know, I hate to say bought and paid for, but ultimately bought and paid for and allowing the railroads to water down the bills and effectively, you know, doing exactly what they're asked to do by the railroad lobbyists. It's crazy.
When is this all supposed to come to resolve here? Is there a timetable on this legislation?
Well, it's got that's the other thing, is that it's been put on the back burner and it's not effectively getting pushed through in the time frame that we liked. We liked to see it done already.
Yeah.
And we didn't think that it would be that complicated given the circumstances. The further we get away from East Palestine, unfortunately, the more people forget, and it becomes less important. And what it's going to unfortunately come to is there's going to be another type of situation. In fact, there's already been some pretty bad ones since then. But there's, you know, the Burlington Northern dumped a train in the Yellowstone River. So you know, and there's diesel fuel and all kinds of things like that. So there's those type of disasters to our environment tend to not get that front news story when it affects people directly. Then it seems to raise more attention, but people don't understand when we're dropping chemicals in water, it affects them directly as well. Or, yep, you know, when we're putting them in the rivers and the lakes, that's not always good for our environment, which affects us pretty dramatically, but yet it doesn't raise to the attention that East Palestine did. And I think we can understand why, but with that being said, it's like the next one's coming to a town near you, and we better wake up. We better pay attention, and we better regulate the railroads. They're private industries, but they're very government regulated. It's a company that continues to remind us, that they are privately held. But every time they need the government assistance, they go and get it. And they continue to push this idea that, you know, we're a private industry, but they service the general public. And so it's important that, you know, the regulation is heavy on the railroads. It's important that we keep an eye on it and that we push good laws that keep the railroads safe. And I'll give you a couple quick examples, because when we talk about these things for the regular person out there that doesn't understand railroad, I think it's important to understand some like basic things. For car inspections, there used to be, you know, it used to be an average of about 4 to 5 minutes per car, which quite frankly isn't enough if we're going to be honest. But they would inspect the car nearly 4 to 5 seconds. Well, they've decimated the car departments that used to do these inspections, and have literally cut their workforce more than 50% in the last 10 years, let's say 15 years. They've really just slaughtered those departments to where there's hardly anyone there. And so now they're doing roll by inspections. And so when the cars get inspected, a few seconds per car as it's rolling out of a yard. So in other words, when the car's going out to traverse the track and go across the country, the car inspector sits in the vehicle next to the side of the track and watches that train roll by and tries to inspect it as it's rolling out of the yard. It's totally absurd. There's no way that you can detect these all important, you know, defects if you in that type of manner. It's impossible. And so they're doing the same with the rest of the craft. So for example, my craft does all the maintenance of the railroad and the tracks. And when they go out and do these inspections on bridges and tunnels and tracks, they're important. They take a lot of time. You got to look at all the different ways, you know, that the track's set up and ensure that it has the right, you know, it's level and it's got all these things going on. that are important for the train to operate safely across it and are cutting our workforce down so much that it's difficult to fix and repair and inspect those tracks the way that we used to. So we're being forced to into a situation where we're doing it. We just don't have the time to do it the way that it should be done. And that's, you know, that's a manpower shortage. The workforce, like I said, since 2016 has been cut nearly 30%. And they keep telling and reporting to the STB, the Surface Transportation Board, they keep reporting to them that they're improving their workforce, that they're increasing their workforce, because there's been mandates for them to increase their workforce, especially since East Palestine. And they haven't really effectively done it. We've seen a slight uptick of maybe 600 or 700 people across the entire country. That's nothing. We're thousands of men and women short, and we've increased them 600 people. You know, it's just, and you know, come winter, they'll probably lay those folks off. So it's insane. They just aren't adhering to the mandates, and they are not following. They don't even follow the procedures that are in place, let alone, you know, trying to get, you know, these more serious procedures in place and make them follow them. And this comes down to the FRA. And the FRA is the Federal Railroad Association. It's the government association that oversees the railroad. And they have a mandate to regulate these folks as well through the safety procedures and ensure that all these rules are followed. And like 213 rules is what they're called. Make sure that the track's in the right shape and condition. And they quite frankly just don't. They don't enforce it the way that they should. And there's a guy that runs the FRA. His name's Carl Alexie. And he's ultimately not doing a great job. Or he's the guy that he imposes the rules. Now, the guy above him, his name's Amit Bose. He does a great job, and he's trying to get these things in place. But the actual person stuck in the job is a Trump holdover, and he's just not doing his job. And so the railroad gets away with all this stuff with low fines and low cost, and they continue to operate unsafe. And it's really not changing. I'd say it's more hope than I believed, but we hoped that there would be a change in the industry. There hasn't been. So it's,
sounds like an accident waiting to happen, no doubt about it. Tony Cardwell joining us on our live line right now. He is president of the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees, a division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. National website, BMWE.org. We'll continue with him, talk about paid sick leave. Later in the show, Tommy Buffenberger, our independent labor voice, will also be joining the show. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Hey, this is Sean McGarvey, and I'm president of North America's Building Trades Unions, and I'm a proud listener of America's Workforce. I love this podcast.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Tony Cardwell. Tony, president of the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees, a division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, website bmwe.org. We're talking about the state of the railroad. 1,000 derailments every year. 1,000 derailments every year. You'd think there'd be more publicity on that, but we're not getting it until you have an incident like East Palestine, Ohio. What comes to attention here, and we covered what happened last fall with the paid sick leave and the very fact that your hands are tied. You can't go on strike because of the Railway Labor Act. But it seems like some of these companies are finally realizing, yeah, we better give them paid sick leave if we want to have some employees. I guess it's moving in the right direction. We had a story about Union Pacific last week. I think they're up to six paid sick leave days. So how are we faring on that? It seems to be working well. I'd like to get your opinion, Tony.
Yeah, I would love to start by saying that the BMWD really led this fight, along with the BRS, the Brotherhood of Railroad Signalmen. And I say that because I want to give a credit to a lot of our members and all of the officers of our union that worked their butts off to really bring this to a national story. I got to be the leader of that, but it was all the people that put work into it that really got the story out there. We did a lot of work to bring Congress to get Congress's attention, to get the senator's attention, and ultimately it made it a national story. And I'll say this: I want to believe that the railroads are doing this out of just pure shame, but I think that they probably realize that to operate in today's society, you've got to have some quality of life issues addressed, because they were having a very hard time hiring people. And when you can't do something so simple as be home when you're sick without getting in trouble, without being disciplined for it, it's very difficult to get people to want to work for you. And so I think they realized that this was something that, in the public shame, of course, but ultimately they gave in. Now, the first railroad that gave in had a new CEO, and I'll give him credit because he did recognize the problem and he wanted to do something about it. And so he addressed me privately and said that we'd like to do an agreement. We did the first. It's Joe Hendricks from CSX Railroad. He came from Ford, and he ultimately we were able to put together the first sick leave agreement. It wasn't the 7 days that we wanted, but it definitely was a start. We got 4 days, and that includes 3 days of our what we call personal leave time, which has to be scheduled. It allows those to be used without notification, so there's ultimately up to 7 days of sick leave. So we kind of got to where we wanted to be. It's not the perfect agreement, but it's way better than what we had before, and that kind of broke the ice, if you will, in the industry, and then we were able to get a few more. Now, we have about 60% of our membership that has a sick leave agreement. We're working with being almost there, but the Canadian railroads, the Canadian National, and the Canadian, particularly the Canadian Pacific, we've made no progress on the Canadian Pacific. They just don't have an interest or an appetite for any of it. That's what they continue to tell us, which is totally absurd. But we're going to break them and get it. We're going railroad by railroad, and then we're moving into the small railroads. So the smaller railroads are starting to concede to it as we move along. But we're only about 60% of all rail labor that has it. We won't be satisfied until we get to 100%. But it's a great start. It was brought about because the bill was voted down in the Senate, as you may know, passed in the House. We had a separate bill that was passed, I think it was H.R. 69 or something, if I remember right. But it was passed in the House as a separate bill. And what we had done is we had convinced the Congress that if you are going to stop our strike, which we kind of knew they were going to do, we hoped they wouldn't, but if you're going to stop our strike, you better give us sick leave. And if you don't, it's going to be a problem. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican, it's going to be a problem because, it, you know, we're going to push back. And so and that wasn't a great look for the White House at that time. They definitely didn't want to have a situation where they're stopping a strike, but we didn't get what we wanted. And so we were able to get Congress to move on that and actually put a bill through that added 7 sick leave days. It passed the House, and it actually, we got 52 votes in the Senate. We got a few Republicans to go with us. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough. And so it takes that filibuster of 60 votes in the Senate, as a lot of people know. We didn't get past that filibuster, and so we ultimately failed getting it through the bill. And so they imposed the agreement, the recommendations on us, and agreed they imposed it on us without giving us the sick leave. And so that gave us, naturally gave us a voice in the media. And so we were able to raise awareness on this, and the public shame definitely brought some of the railroads, if not all the railroads, to their knees. I would say that I think CSX initially did it out of a desire and a realization that it needed to be done. Mm-hmm. The rest of them, I think maybe they did it because we brought awareness to this issue and stood in solidarity in rail labor and demanded it. So ultimately, we were able to get it. And it's one of the first times ever that you've gotten a major agreement or national style of agreement done outside of the round of bargaining. So it was good for the rail industry, and it is good for the railroads to realize that we can bring that type of publicity to the table to get what we need, because most of what we do, the bargaining realm, is done in the under the eye of the federal government. And so that was good. And we're still working on it, because like I said, I don't think 4 days is enough. I think that eventually we'll need to get more. But ultimately, it's a great start. It's the right thing to do. It's going to definitely help the industry. Like I said, a lot of people, even during COVID, it took quite a while to where people would call in sick and it would be reported on their record. They literally can't come to work. It, legally, by law, can't come to work, and they were having things placed on their personal record. That's how absurd the industry Jesus. Can be sometimes. They just are harsh, and ultimately, you know, if you have the flu, one day you wake up with the flu, you call in sick, you're going to get docked. Your personal record's going to get damaged, and if you have so much on your personal record, you can be up to including termination. So we were able to achieve it. We were able to get the sick leave days. It's been a huge benefit to the members, and we're hopeful that we can get more in future negotiations.
Yeah, you got to work on that other 40%. Well, the public shaming obviously moved the needle in the right direction. And you mentioned the voice in the media. You always have a voice here, Tony. I mean, that's what this show is all about. It's all about workers. It's all about getting the right thing done. And obviously you did that, but there's more work to be done. Tony Cardwell joining us as president of the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees, a division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, one of our national sponsors here. You take care and stay in touch. Let's do this down the road, okay, brother?
Absolutely.
All right, quick break. Tommy Buffenberger, our independent labor voice, former general president of the Machinist Union, will be joining us next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. And you can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Thomas Buffenbarger, former general president of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. I want to tell you, too, if you missed the July 4th edition of this show, you got to listen to that. Tommy did a great job on the history, the union history of Harley-Davidson. I mean, talk about an iconic brand that almost went out of business back in the 1980s. And if it wasn't for the workers, they probably wouldn't be around today. Got to check out that show, awfpodcast.com on July 4th. Tommy, I thank you for that. A lot of good reaction to what you talked about in that show. But today we're going to talk about worker safety. And I bring this to attention because our dear friends at the House Appropriations Committee, this was last week, they want to reduce OSHA by more than $100 million. $100 million. And right now, Tommy, you know OSHA doesn't have much teeth as it is. I don't know what this is going to do, but there are some people I know that would like to see it go away altogether. I'm sure this rattles your cage a little bit, doesn't it?
It does, Flash, because I am so old. I was actually around when OSHA became law, signed into law by Richard M. Nixon.
Right, right. That's
and 1970. Here we had a Republican president working with a Democratic Congress, and the president was very supportive of the legislation, knowing that workers needed some protections. And ever since that time, the Republican Party has worked to eliminate, cut it back, defang it, whatever. This is an assault on working people. It doesn't matter what you do, whether you're a union worker or not. OSHA exists under the guise of protecting your safety. So you can come home at the end of the day to your family safe and sound. And why people would want to eliminate it, cut it back, make it less effective, I don't know. We still have too many deaths in the workplace. And we need to strengthen it, not cut it back. And remember, OSHA, it's every industry is affected by this. And to see them want to cut $100 million from an agency that's not adequately funded anyway is beyond the pale. I don't get it.
They also want to cut funding for the National Labor Relations Board, which is doing really good work right now. There's a lot of organizing going on, but obviously there's some elected leaders that don't like that trend in America, so they want to pretty much cut their funding, which was just increased in the last session of Congress. It's crazy what's going on. Let's switch gears here a little bit and talk about the Defense Authorization Act. And there's some provisions in there that would be, you know, Buy America. It's important that we strengthen Buy America provisions because we want American workers to make the goods. Now, what's going on in that arena, Tom?
Well, what's going on is this, Flash. The Defense Authorization Act comes up every year, and it provides money for the Defense Department to certainly acquire and train service people in all the armed forces. And it also provides the piggy bank in order to produce and acquire the weapons we need to defend our country. and to assist our allies in their defense. Well, everybody knows right now we got a bad situation going on in Ukraine. The U.S. has been very generously supplying weapons to Ukraine, as has NATO. All the Western economies that are part of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, as we should. Because if we don't fight it in Ukraine, we'll be fighting it someplace else on our type of ground. In any event, there's a provision that's very important to workers in there, and that is for American defense production, we need to make that here in America and not rely on foreign countries to supply the means of our defense. If we lose, and this is something and the machinists have said for years and years, if we lose the means to produce our defense, we'll lose the means to produce our prosperity. And so this is critical that we up this Buy America provision to a greater percentage than it is now. It seems that the powers that be, and I understand the economics of it, they want to buy stuff for the defense of our country from the cheapest source possible, but they're too quick to run to, of all places, China, to have the computer chips, to have the electronics, all made for our aircraft, our tanks, all the stuff we use. We need to make that here in America. So in the event there's ever a big emergency, we have the means to make our defense. And there is a tremendous amount of pushback, especially by one political party, against this. I don't understand that either. This is a patriotic issue. It's a practical issue. It's an economic issue. In fact, we can now say they're buying America actually is cost effective because we can do it better, more reliably, and do it on our shores than we can acquire it and ship it here from places overseas. So this fight in Congress to get the defense authorizations through each year seems to always boil down to the big fight, where are we going to make it? Where are we going to make these products we need? And there should never be an argument over that. It should be made in America. Mm-hmm. And so this fight, now they have approved it now, but there's still debate about what happens to the America Made in America provisions. Joe Biden and the current administration want to see that percentage upped. And we have the other party wanting to eliminate the Buy America provision. And I just don't get this. Things are going to get tougher over in Europe. We got to be able to provide the help that they're going to need to win the fight against tyranny. And, you know, we need to be able to show them we can make that here.
Yeah. And, Tommy, we're winning that fight. I heard a report today that half the land that Russia sees is now back in Ukrainian hands. So it's moving in the right direction. Good stuff here. Tommy, we're going to have to go here. I want to give a shout-out here to the district organizer, the Machinist Union, Philip French, and they organized recently the Aerojet Rocketdyne facility in Huntsville, Alabama. And we're talking about 700 workers that are going to have representation from your union, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. So you take care, stay safe, go back to retirement, okay, brother?
Never, Flash. I'm going to stay active.
There you go. All right. That'll okay. be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the United Electrical Workers and the Florida Education Association. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.